CJSF is looking for new volunteers to come in and make radio. No experience is necessary. You can learn to DJ, edit sound, produce news, make posters, and host your own show. Come out to a weekly station orientation to get involved. Orientation times can be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
Meanwhile, Abbott continues to defy a Supreme Court order that allowed the Biden administration to cut down razor wire put up by Texas troopers along its border with Mexico. European Union leaders have approved a new 50 billion euro funding package to Ukraine, overcoming weeks of resistance from Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban. This comes as the U.S. Senate is expected to vote on a Ukraine military aid and U.S.-Mexico border enforcement deal next week following heated negotiations. In Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky is reportedly set to dismiss his top general, Valery Zaluzhny. Tensions between the two have been rising following Ukraine's failed counteroffensive last year and after Zaluzhny described the war with Russia as a stalemate. In related news, the International Court of Justice has found Russia violated portions of two treaties, one on financing terrorism, another on eradicating racial discrimination. The ruling came as part of Ukraine's case accusing Moscow of funding separatist groups in eastern Ukraine and discriminating against Crimea's multi-ethnic community since its annexation a decade ago. The court, however, declined to rule on Ukraine's request for Russia to pay reparations for attacks in eastern Ukraine blamed on pro-separatist Ukrainian rebels. In the UK, the Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg appeared in a London court Thursday as her trial got underway for protesting outside the entrance of a major oil and gas industry conference last October. Greta spoke outside the courthouse alongside two co-defendants.
Even though we are the ones standing here, and climate, environmental, and human rights activists all over the world are being prosecuted, sometimes convicted, and given legal penalties for acting in line with science, we must remember who the real enemy is. What are we defending? Who are our laws meant to protect?
Back in the United States, the Republican-dominated Georgia State Senate passed a bill which would criminalize the majority of bail funds. SB 63 would make bailing more than three people out of jail per year illegal, including for nonprofits and churches that run bail funds. It also adds to the list of non-bail-eligible offenses. This comes as three activists with the Atlanta Solidarity Fund are facing racketeering and other charges in Georgia related to the prosecution of dozens of Cop City protesters. It could also affect major national programs that operate in Georgia, such as Black Mama's bailout action. In New York, a federal judge sentenced former CIA software engineer Joshua Schulte to 40 years in prison after being convicted of leaking thousands of CIA documents known as Vault 7 to WikiLeaks. The leaks, published in 2017, revealed CIA programs and tools that are capable of hacking into Apple and Android cell phones. In addition to espionage and computer hacking, Schulte was also convicted for possessing child pornography. And the World Health Organization expects global cancer cases to rise by 77% over the next 30 years. The study predicts cancer-related deaths will roughly double from current levels to reach around 20 million fatalities a year by 2050. The WHO says tobacco, alcohol, air pollution, and population aging and growth are some of the key factors behind the rising numbers. Lower-income countries will be disproportionately affected. Currently, one out of every 12 patients in wealthier countries are diagnosed with breast cancer, and one in 71 will die from the disease. In poorer countries, just one in 27 patients are diagnosed in their lifetime, but one in 48 will die from breast cancer. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, is President Biden losing the Arab American vote over his support for Israel's assault on Gaza? We'll speak with the Dearborn mayor in Michigan and with Arab American pollster James Zogby. Back in 20 seconds.
Get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove. You got a fast car, I got a plan to get us out of here. Been working at the convenience store, managed to save just a little bit of money.
Fast Car by Tracy Chapman. She's the first black woman to have the number one country song in the United States. She's only performed three times publicly in the last 15 years, but will be singing publicly that song at the Grammys this weekend with Luke Combs. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden traveled to Michigan Thursday for a campaign stop where he met with members of the United Auto Workers Union, which has endorsed him. Michigan is a crucial swing state that could prove decisive in the general election in November. Michigan's also home to the largest percentage of Arab Americans in the United States. In 2020, Biden won Michigan with just 154,000 votes more than Donald Trump, making the Arab American vote a decisive one in the election. Yet Biden's facing widespread protests over his administration's support for Israel's assault on Gaza and his refusal to call for a ceasefire. While the White House did not say ahead of time which town Biden would be visiting on Thursday, only that it was in the Detroit area, hundreds of pro-Palestinian protesters were waiting for Biden in Warren outside the UAW offices. Last week, Biden's campaign manager, Julie Chavez Rodriguez, traveled to Dearborn to rally support for the president's reelection. Yet her trip ended when a group of Arab American leaders and elected officials declined to meet with her over the war in Gaza. Among them was the mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, Abdullah Hamoud. He wrote on X, quote, "I will not entertain conversations about elections while we watch a live stream genocide backed by our government." Mayor Abdullah Hamoud is joining us now from Dearborn, which is home to one of the largest Muslim and Arab American populations in the United States. And in Washington, D.C., we're joined by James Zogby, president of the Arab American Institute. His new piece for The Nation, Biden's Erasure of Arabs, is part of a painful history I know too well. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Mayor, let's begin with you in Dearborn. I mean, this was quite a scene this week. When the UAW endorsed President Biden, it was a major rally for him, but a number of people held up Palestinian flags and demanded a ceasefire. He comes back on Thursday. It's actually in a very small place as they try to control the possibility of protest inside and out. We only learned at the last minute where he was going to be. But talk about the stand that you took and what you're calling on the Biden administration to do, Mayor Abdullah Hamoud.
Thanks for having me. You know, the stand that we took was sending the message that this is not a moment that calls for electoral politics. Over the course now of coming close to 120 days, Israel has murdered more than 27,000 Gazans and displaced over 2 million. And for us, the lives of Palestinians should not be measured simply in poll numbers. We want to have meaningful dialogue with senior decision makers and policymakers who have the ability and the openness to change course on what's folding overseas. And as you've seen at rallies across this country, the position that we've taken, one in which we support a ceasefire, is not one just supported by Arab Americans and Muslim Americans. This is supported by over 60% of Americans across the country, over 80% of Democrats, and even over 50% of Republicans.
You're the first Muslim mayor of Dearborn, also the first Arab American mayor of Dearborn. You refused to meet with President Biden's campaign manager, Julie Chavez Rodriguez. Can you talk about what you told the administration and her response and the Biden administration response?
I didn't communicate it directly back to the campaign. I passed it back to the individual who was trying to organize the meeting. It was a fellow Arab American, and we had all declined simultaneously. So I can't speak to what that conversation was. But the message that I know that was sent, and generally speaking, was that we believe that community engagement can be powerful when the conversation we're having is about saving lives. But again, it has to be with policymakers and not with campaign staff in this moment of time.
Did President Biden meet with any Arab Americans yesterday that you know of?
Not that I know of. I can't speak to what his itinerary was. But as you saw, hundreds of protesters showed up and rallied outside of where the campaign event was held.
Jim Zogby, can you talk about the significance of this? You're president of the Arab American Institute. President Biden had overwhelmingly the Arab American vote in the last presidential election. Talk about how it's dropped precipitously.
It's gone from 59% in 2020 to 17% end of last October. I dare say it's even lower now. People have gone from shock and disappointment now to anger. And I think that the mayor, I'm a big fan of Mayor Hamoud, but I think he speaks very well and clearly toward what the attitude of the community is. This isn't a time to come and talk about voting for you. It's a time to talk about what the heck are you doing? And I have to say that in addition to the policy being so awful, so insensitive, so just genocidal in terms of what it's been doing, not only in terms of supporting Israel, but the ways we've been supporting Israel. In addition to that, they've been totally ham-fisted in the way that they've dealt with the community. There's not been a single Arab American leadership meeting with officials. They've brought in meetings. They say this is a Muslim meeting, and they have excluded the Arab American leadership and brought in some random people that they find to fill a room so they can check the box and say, we met with people. But it's never been substantive, and it's never produced an outcome. I think they really don't care. And they think, as they've said to me, come November, it's a binary choice, and your folks will vote for us. They won't. I've seen it before. We saw it in 2000. We saw it in 2016. They'll vote for third party, or they won't vote at all. And that spells disaster for this White House.
I heard a number of people yesterday in Michigan being interviewed, Arab American voters, when asked, well, do you really think President Trump, with his Muslim ban and promising to do it again, and his much closer relationship with Netanyahu and the far right in Israel, would be better? And time and again, I mean, you had people holding up signs that said abandon Biden, and when mm-hmm. saying they wouldn't vote for either, saying they would simply write in ceasefire.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we're hearing, and that's what is happening right now, is a move afoot to vote ceasefire. I think they're voting uncommitted is what the trend is in this primary. I think that the White House is taking for granted that they've got support, and they don't. They don't have ears on the ground. People who are doing the outreach for them don't have ears to hear what the community is saying, or simply don't want to go back and tell their bosses this is what the community is saying. The result is that they're cut off from reality. They're cut off from reality that's taking place on the ground. I mean, it is a genocide. It is unfolding. They told us they were going to do it. They've done it. We're watching it play out every single day. And yet the administration response is, oh, we're urging them to be careful about civilians, and we're telling them the humanitarian aid needs to come through. It's not coming through. Genocide is happening. And yet they live in a world of denial, and they think that we're going to believe the denial instead of what we see with our eyes. So that's how they're operating with the policy, but it's also how they're operating with the politics. These folks will come around. Like I said, it's insulting. It's demeaning. It doesn't respect people's real feelings. And the result is that they're slow walking the president into the abyss. And November is going to be, I think, a real problem for the White House.
I mean, when you talk about he's siloed off, he really hardly is. Everywhere he goes, whether it was the AME church in Charleston, people interrupting, demanding ceasefire, or yesterday, or the UAW announcement just a few days ago, where auto workers were holding up signs because UAW was one of the earliest to endorse a ceasefire. President Biden himself is certainly hearing this. And I wanted to go to a reporter questioning White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre Wednesday.
The president has faced a lot of criticism in Michigan from the Arab American community. What does he say? What's his message to them, those who feel disenchanted by the Gaza operation?
Look, the president's going to continues to believe that Israel has a right to defend himself. They have a right to defend itself as long as they continue. It is done in accordance of international humanitarian law. So we will continue to have those conversations with them. At the same time, he is heartbroken by the suffering of innocent Palestinians.
So that was Karine Jean-Pierre's message to Michigan as President Biden went there. Is that that Israel has a right to defend itself. Mayor Hamdoun, will you be voting for President Biden?
You know, for me, that question falls back to President Biden. What will he do to earn the trust and respect of the constituency that he's trying to represent? You know, I was watching that press conference, and it really is a slap to the face. Every military expert and humanitarian expert across this globe has demonstrated that Israel is not abiding by any international law. That is why the International Court of Justice actually moved forward with South Africa's case, indicating that it's very plausible that what is unfolding in Gaza, by the state of Israel is a genocide, and upheld again by a federal judge here in the United States just this week, in which he dismissed a case of an organization tried suing President Biden. And in the judge's opinion, he said, I do believe it is very plausible that Israel is committing a genocide that is being supported and upheld and defended by these United States of America.
Mayor Hamoud, you have constituents whose families are in Gaza. What are they saying to you? And do you think the situation will be very different in, well, almost a year from now when the election takes place?
People feel betrayed. We were promised in 2020 a president who was going to bring back decency to the White House, who led with humanity. And what we've seen since October 7th is anything but. We've seen an alignment with Benjamin Netanyahu and the most right-wing government in Israel's history. And we cannot for the life of us understand why. Why, understanding that Trump being a threat to our American democracy, is that alignment with Benjamin Netanyahu worth the unraveling of the very fabric of our American democracy? And so that's how people are feeling right now.
I wanted to go to an Al Jazeera reporter, Fadi Mansour, who questioned Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin in his first news conference since he was hospitalized about U.S. military support for Israel.
Back in December, in your speech at the Reagan Library, you told Israeli leaders they have to protect civilian lives in Gaza. Since that speech, 12,000 more Palestinians have been killed. We're now at 27,000 killed. Why are you still supporting this war when this government, that is the most extreme in the history of Israel, led by someone who refuses to recognize any political right for the Palestinians, and with elements that are calling for ethnic cleansing and displacement of Palestinians? Do Palestinians have the right to dignity, as you said in Angola when I was with you on the trip? You said the future belongs to those who protect dignity, not trample it.
Yeah. I said that in the speech at the Reagan Forum. I've said that to my counterpart, Minister Gallant, every time that I talk to him, and I talk to him every week. And I emphasize the importance of protecting civilian lives. I also emphasize the importance of providing humanitarian assistance to the Palestinians.
So that's Lloyd Austin, defense secretary, being questioned by Al Jazeera. Jim Zogby, if you can talk about what you feel needs to happen right now and the people you're polling, you're talking to, what could make a difference?
At this point, in terms of electoral politics, I'm not sure that anything makes a real difference. The wound is too deep. The losses are too great. The hurt is real, and they're doing nothing to address it. But at least to have a conversation, they have to make some dramatic changes in policy. The first, of course, is a ceasefire. We had a summit with Reverend Jackson's Operation Push and Interfaith Collection of Organizations a couple of weeks back in Chicago. We had three demands: an immediate, sustainable ceasefire, increase in humanitarian aid and reconstruction aid in Gaza, and conditioning U.S. aid to Israel, military aid to Israel, stopping it and then conditioning future aid based on U.S. law. Those are the three essential demands, I think, to move it forward. They're not listening to us. They're not even asking us. And yet they want our vote. And so I think that you can get a conversation, which is an important thing moving forward. Any community needs a conversation with those in the White House. But getting our vote, there's a lot of hurt here to get over. It's sort of like a serial cheat coming home to his wife and saying, this time I'm going to change. You got to show it. Even to have a conversation, you have to show it. And we're not seeing that from these guys now at all.
James Zogby, president of Arab American Institute, we will link to your article in The Nation, Biden's erasure of Arabs as part of a painful history I know well. And thanks so much to Dearborn Mayor Abdul Hamoud. This is Democracy Now! Coming up, we speak with award-winning filmmaker Ava DuVernay about her new film, Origins. Stay with us.
We are the color found in spring. You are the wind breathing to me.
By the New Zealand Maori artist Stan Walker for the soundtrack of Ava DuVernay's new film, Origin. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. We spend the rest of the hour with award-winning filmmaker Ava DuVernay. She's explored Black history, many of the movies she's directed, from Selma to the documentary 13th that explores race in the prison industrial complex, to the miniseries When They See Us, about the Central Park Five, now known as the Exonerated Five. She also directed Disney's A Wrinkle in Time. Ava DuVernay's new film is called Origin, takes viewers on a journey that explores racism from the United States and the killing of Trayvon Martin to Dalits in India, all used to be called the Untouchables, to Nazi book burnings in Germany and the killings of Jews in the lead-up to World War II. It does so by dramatizing the book Cast, The Origins of Our Discontents, by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Isabel Wilkerson, as well as the process of writing the book. This is the trailer for Origin.
If you look closely, you'll find something tragic was happening.
Are you interested in writing something for us?
I don't do assignments anymore.
Yeah, well, you're a better writer than most people do anything. Have you heard the tapes?
No. Of what?
Central Police Department, this is Sean.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. Looks like he's up to no good or something.
I want to be in the story. Really inside the story. And build a thesis that shows how all of this is linked.
I gotta be honest with you,